The date is June 8th, 1984, and we're watching Top Secret. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Chocolate Mousse to my deja vu.
The people at home can't see it right now, but I just ate my cigar that I was smoking. Hello, everyone. I'm Colin Stewart.
So I'm very excited. We are wrapping up our request.
Sean sounds like he smoked like 12 packs of cigars.
I know, right? Holy cow. So we are wrapping up our request month, and this week we have a request from Zarin and Elizabeth, who are the hosts of a podcast called Ridiculous Crime. I'm not sure whether it was Zarin or whether it was Elizabeth that requested this. I'm not sure who's in charge of their social media. Hell, they may be a big enough show that they don't even have to handle their own social media like us little amateurs over here. But it's either Zarin or Elizabeth, so I'll just give a shout out to their podcast, Ridiculous Crime. It's a fun podcast. So I'm excited to do this movie. This week we are looking back at June 1984, when the movies in theaters were Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, Star Trek III, The Search for Spock, and a couple of our alum movies, Gremlins, Ghostbusters, and of course our movie for today, Top Secret, which earned $20.45 million on a $9 million budget.
Wow. Not too bad. But as always, there will be spoilers ahead, so if you don't want this... If you want to keep the spoilers top secret, then hit pause, go watch the movie, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
I see what you did there. Well, the taglines kind of follow where you're going with that. The tagline that appears on the poster for this movie, I've got five this week. The first one, a film.
Okay.
Yeah. Second one. These are the taglines, yeah. S-H-H-H exclamation mark. Yeah, that's all that there is for the second one. Third one, we've got movie. What movie?
All right.
Yeah. Fourth up, don't tell anyone.
Okay.
And finally, this is the best one. From the makers of the original Airplane. Not the Wright brothers.
Wow. I mean, I will say that those are all very fitting taglines for this movie in a way that you can't understand until you watch it.
Yeah. I'll get into it a bit more in a second. But yeah, I had this... I couldn't remember what this movie was when I sat down to watch it. And... I read the taglines first before watching the movie, and then I had an idea of what I might be in for. But as we can see, terrible descriptions of this movie, so let's go to Colin and get a 60-second synopsis.
I mean, I'm honestly afraid that my synopsis will not do much better. Well, it'll give you like it'll give you a little bit, but as like... The real synopsis of this movie is, like, watch the background and just enjoy yourself and pay no mind to what's actually happening on screen.
Yeah, a lot of sleight of hand going on, a lot of...
And just expect every, like, obvious joke, but also every non-obvious joke to be played at the exact same time.
So many layers. This movie's an onion.
Yep. So... This is actually a pretty short synopsis for all those reasons, because I was just like, I don't know. If anybody goes and watches this movie, you'll understand. I feel like I'm just going to say that over and over again.
So the synopsis is so short that you just feel the need to stretch out the intro to this synopsis. Well,
yeah. Like, I'm just saying, the synopsis is so bland that, like, it can't, but it's just because you can't do it adequately. It's not, this movie is not about what's happening in the movie.
Yeah, we gotta get into this movie. So yeah, let's do this.
Okay. When American rock and roll sensation Nick Rivers travels to East Germany for an international music festival, he falls for a beautiful German girl named Hilary Flamand and finds himself swept into an underground resistance movement that's trying to free Hilary's father, Paul, who's being held captive by the East German government who seek to use his scientific mind to develop a machine capable of destroying NATO submarine fleet in order to prevent them from thwarting their plan of reuniting East and West Germany under one government. And then I put, that's the gist. There is more, but it's too much to go into detail here. So that's your 60-second synopsis.
Oh, outstanding. Yeah, this is one that if you had asked me if I had seen Top Secret, I'd be like, oh, yeah, that's that Val Kilmer goofy comedy. I don't know if I've seen this. And once I sat down to watch it, there were some scenes that, like, stuck out as memorable where I'm sure I've seen this movie. But then on other parts, I was like, I don't know if I've seen this movie. So thank you to Zarin and Elizabeth of Ridiculous Crime for bringing this into my life. Because if I haven't actually seen this movie, I'm certainly glad that I have now. It was things like, for some reason, the ballet scene stuck out in my head as a scene that I knew. So I just don't know whether I've seen enough clips of this movie over the years, or I don't know whether I've just absorbed this movie somehow in pop culture. I'm still not sure. But I've seen it now. I've seen it now, that's for sure. I've seen it a few times now. Colin, what about you? What is my favorite part about this whole movie was when I said, hey, we've got another request, here we go. And you said, oh, what's the movie? And I said, Top Secret. And you're like, oh, when are you going to tell me? And I'm like, no. That's the movie. It's Top Secret. So what is your history with Top Secret?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's safe to say zero. I'd never even heard of this movie before. Didn't know this movie was a thing.
Yeah.
And it was even stranger for me to realize that it starred Val Kilmer, because I kind of always just assumed that Val Kilmer's career also started with Top Gun.
Yeah, I will say that even though this is only a couple years before Top Gun, like, he looks even younger in this movie somehow. Young Val Kilmer, it had my Kinsey scale sliding a little bit. I mean, I was very impressed by young Val Kilmer, and what a good-looking dude he was. Oh, my God.
Yeah, he's, I mean, similarly, I guess, it kind of reminded me of when we watched, like, Tom Cruise in Risky Business. Yeah. Like, I'm like, you're a child. Like, you look like a little child man. Like,
yeah. Well, let's jump into Top Secret, directed by Jim Abrams, David Zucker, and Jerry Zucker, produced by John Davison, Hunt Lowry, written by Jim Abrams, David Zucker, Jerry Zucker, and Martin Burke. Do you think that because of the fact that there's three directors, each one of them had their own specific job to do in any given shot? Like, I feel like that's distinctly possible, is it's like, okay, you handle all the background shit, I'm going to handle all the foreground shit.
Yeah, like, you probably have somebody who's,
you work with the set director, you know? Yeah. Like,
there's probably somebody who's overseeing, like, what are the actual performances, how are those doing? There's somebody seeing, like, checking, are the jokes playing? And then there's probably another director that's just kind of, like, looking for the opportunity. Like, where can we add more? Like, a little bit
where
more flair.
Yeah. So we open this movie with a train running along the tracks in East Germany, and there's a fight happening on the train. And the fight goes to the roof of the train, and we see a bridge looming in the distance. And the spy, who is Omar Sharif, we're we're thinking, oh, he's going to get this soldier knocked off by the bridge, and he ends up crashing through the bridge, and that's when I'm like, okay, this is what kind of movie I'm in for. Here we go.
Yeah. That's just basically how it stays the entire time. The first time through this movie, I was kind of just like, I don't know, I wasn't really paying close attention, so I was kind of just like, oh, like, stuff's happening, you know, like, I was actually trying to pay attention to, like, what the actual, like, story of it was. But then the second time I watched it, it was like watching a whole different movie.
Yeah.
Like seeing, yeah, just seeing every joke come to the fore was interesting.
Yeah, when your attention starts, they're experts at pulling focus, is what they're doing. You know, as soon as you realize that, oh, wait, I have to start watching the left hand while the right hand's doing something different. You know, it's once you kind of realize what's going on, it's you're always looking for it. And the first time I watched the movie, that's the problem, is I saw the background shit first.
Okay.
And it started pulling me out of the story. I had no idea what was going on in the story. Like, if I had watched this movie one time through, I would have probably said, it was funny to watch, but I have no idea what was going on. Because I missed most of the plot just because I was taken out of it by the cheese from the pizzas in the background, things like that. Yeah. So it was quite a weird experience. But the other thing that was strange was the first time I watched it through, I realized this on my second and third watch, I didn't have subtitles on the copy that I watched the first time. So the whole scene where they're introducing the East German Olympic team, that I missed all the subtitles from that. The backward scene, I had no idea what the fuck was going on in the backwards bookstore scene because there were no subtitles on that one. It was just this random scene in the middle of the movie where it was... And I'm just like, I have no idea. Like, are they making a joke about Swedish? Why aren't they subtitling anyone?
Yeah.
The second time through, I had subtitles, and the movie made a lot more sense. And I was focused on watching the foreground stuff. I was focused on watching the story that time.
Yeah, it's kind of... I've never seen a movie like it. Like, I haven't seen Airplane or, like, movies...
Naked Gun, Hot Shots?
Nah, I haven't seen any movies like that, which I assume are kind of in this vein, so it was weird. It was a weird experience. What weird experience for me, because I was just like, I don't know, even the simplest jokes, like when the guy on the, like, horse and wagon is... They're showing him singing, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, like, this is just a normal German man singing while he's riding on his wagon, and then they just cut right to the horse, and then they have the joke of, like, oh, he's a little horse, like, after the thing.
Exactly.
And then it's a little horse, and you're like, it's just that humor, like, every two lines, like, they never let up.
I can't get over the amount of choices that are made in this movie just because it's going to be that much funnier. Like, even when after this train scene, we see a motorcycle pull up to the East German High Command, and he takes the tether of the motorcycle and throws it over the railing like he's tying up a horse.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, who thinks of that? Like, it was just, it's so random, but if you look at every single thing that is thrown into this movie, it's just like, it's ridiculous upon ridiculous upon ridiculous. It's
the one that caught me was, I think it's in that opening scene when the German soldier comes in and he pulls off his hat, but the strapping all stays. He just pulls off his hat to take off the letter, and I'm like,
yeah,
it's just like, it's just a why. Like, why?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's like, this was a funny fucking movie. Like, I even, you know, we're right there anyway. The guy, he brings in the letter, he looks at it, and he wants to find him and kill him stamp. Right? Yeah. Like, you know, who has a find him and kill him stamp? That was an absolutely great thing. But you don't actually see any of the stamps sitting on the desk. But the guy is making the choice to actually look around like he's looking through multiple stamps before he gets the find him and kill him stamp. So it's like, I want to know what other stamps this guy has now. that he has to search for the find him and kill him one.
Yeah, and then, like, you cut to the music, and, like, that first music video with the skeet surfing.
Skeet surfing.
That was the first time through when that scene hit, I was just like, we're on another level here.
We are.
Like, I don't know what's happening.
because it's also such a good song. Let me tell you, I found a top secret soundtrack on Spotify, and I have been playing that shit nonstop because, like, there's some bangers on there. I love Skeet Surfing. Oh, my God. What an amazing song. Hilarious. Like, but even the way the opening is done with this montage too, like, it shows that Nick Rivers has three songs in the top three, and all of them are skeet related, like, not surfing related, skeet related.
Yeah. I was thinking, I mean, it's a comedy obviously, but I was just like, you know, I feel like that's something that, like, I don't know, a European version of SNL would play to, like, spoof America Now.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You're just upset. Like, you're so obsessed with your... Part of me, the first time I saw it was like, ooh, that probably doesn't play well now because it's just so indicative
it's a little aggressive gun
culture. And, like, they have a whole scene of all these kids running through the school halls with shotguns and stuff.
Yeah.
And but at the same time, I was like, no, it is kind of still, like... You know, it is comedic because it, like, not much has changed and things have only gotten worse.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Like skeet surfing is a dangerous sport. He's taking out the umbrellas on the beach, and it's like, yeah, but that seems legit.
Mm. But even the most random things, like the girl who's, like, suntanning in the sand and
leaves the divots,
leaves the boob holes.
Yeah, replace your divots, ma'am. That's the rules on this beach. Yeah, or yeah, all the people running down the beach to join everyone while carrying their shotguns. Oh my God! Like, and in the opening, they also show, like, magazine covers. And, you know, some of them are legit, like Time and Newsweek and everything. But then there's also, like, Bullets and Ammo magazine or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was shocked that Val Kilmer actually sung all those songs. He's not a guy that I think of as a singer.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, okay. Like, I love The Doors. Like, I don't know how deep into Val Kilmer's filmography you go. I mean,
I'm pretty much Batman Forever.
Batman and Willow. That's about all.
And
you
Willow,
kinda,
yeah.
And I guess Top Gun. Can't forget Top Gun. Okay, so you've never seen him as Jim Morrison because he sang all the songs in The Doors as well.
Okay.
Yeah. So I got that introduction to him there, but I mean, Jim Morrison, kind of a moody dude, right? I was blown away by Val Kilmer in this. I mean, this movie was said to be an intentional mashup of Elvis and World War II spy films. And it's like, yep, that's it. They nailed it. You kind of see that young Val Kilmer could have played Elvis in a biopic as well because...
Oh, yeah.
First of all, damn, let me once again say how sexy I found Val Kilmer. This is Patrick Swayze in Roadhouse all over again for me. I mean, he's got me feeling things. I mean, young Val Kilmer, but... Holy shit, he is next level of a performer. I cannot believe, I don't see any trickery to any of the dancing that he's doing. Like,
yeah, I was going to say, watching this movie, like, with my limited, like, I've only seen Val Kilmer in these, like, dark, kind of, like, brood, like, more macho roles, I guess. So, like, watching him in this movie being, like, a funny guy and mm-hmm. just I don't know, the word that just comes to mind, I guess, is youthful. Like, I've always thought he's, like, a pretty good-looking guy, but he just, like, he has a certain, like, zhuzh in this movie.
Yeah.
And I agree. Like, the dancing, specifically the carpet song.
Wow.
I was like,
right?
I was like, how is he not dying dancing on these carpets?
Because I looked at him on that first carpet, and I thought, wow, if this cafeteria or this cafe, this diner were to actually have these carpets on their floor, there would be trays flying everywhere. Right? Like, yeah. those are dangerous carpets, and he's going from one to another, and, like, and he's not ripping any groins open by, you know, over-splitting himself or anything. That one, and just when he's doing the Tutti Frutti, and he's just climbing over tables and coming down on the chandelier and up onto the piano, like, that was just another one where it's like, he's jumping off a piano. He was next level when it came to performing. I was so impressed by Val Kilmer. And it's just like, oh, okay. Now I see why, like, where Mad Mardigan came from. You know, like, in a way. I don't know. Yeah, it's just, wow. Yeah, Val Kilmer.
I mean, I feel like this whole conversation is like, you're like, man, wasn't it so funny when they did this? But the next one I want to bring up was, I think, because after that is... we see, like, Nick and his agent or whatever on the train.
Yeah.
And just another one of these, like, stupid gag jokes is, like, he's painting this picture, and then they show the picture, and it's literally, like...
he's painting a blurry
landscape.
The outdoors
of a blurry landscape.
Right? Like, and but meanwhile, while all this is going on, you also have to listen to what the tape recording is saying, because it's saying the... it's teaching him the most ridiculous German phrases, like, you know, there's a schnitzel in my lederhosen and, you know, stuff like that. Like, it's just, there's so much going on. When he was sitting there in this opening scene, though, like doing his painting, I'm like, he looked so much like Jonathan Taylor Thomas, too.
Yes, totally.
And his assistant was giving me like chubby Hugo Weaving vibe. Like, I don't, yeah, it's just, or no, sorry, not, sorry, one of the soldiers, sorry, gives me chubby Hugo Weaving vibe. The assistant guy gave me Taggart from Beverly Hills Cop vibe. That's what it was. Yeah. But, yeah. Yeah, and then they pull into the station, they have this conversation with the Nazi soldiers, and then the station pulls away. Like, it's just, like, what? Who thinks of this? Who thinks of this? I can't keep like, up.
It was... I mean, I don't know. This, it kind of gave me, like, a desire to go and watch Airplane.
Yeah.
And Naked Gun, because I was just like... it's all, there's almost, like, to me, a boldness of putting that many jokes. Like the joke per, I don't know... frame even maybe is so high in this movie that it seems like almost courageous to do it because you would expect that at some point like a viewer would just be like ah, this is getting old, but it's so well crafted that it just never happens,
and they always take a left turn.
Yeah, because somehow the story always drags you in enough to be like, oh, well, we're back on track. And then, oh, slip back, and then, oh, we're back. And then, oh, we're gone. And then it's like,
yeah,
it's just, it's this. Somebody should be teaching this movie in like a university course, yeah. I think, on comedy.
There's the one scene where, what's her face? What is her name? Helen, right? No, Hillary. Where Hillary looks out the window of the apartment and she looks down. And it's, like, clearly a miniature because mice start running down the street. It's just this extra 5 seconds that for some reason they've put in this view that she is looking out on. And, yeah, it's, you know, like the cars, they've got mice running around the cars. And it's just like, you know, why? Or, you know, like in the opening here, after they get boarded on the train and warned of, you know... well, rock and roll is here for the first time, and you're only here out of a courtesy, Mr. Rivers. Well, you know, the station pulls away, the train keeps moving, and then they go to this animated map, which then, like, turns into a Pac-Man board. Or, well, no, first it turns into, like, cars screeching, and, you know, it's supposed to look like roads, and then it turns into Pac-Man for some reason, and it's just, like, they just keep building on it. It's a movie of yes-anding.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Yeah, I think that the only one where I kind of thought, like, this one is just too weird was the pigeon statue. And those guys, like, coming down, like,
peeing
on the pigeon statue, and then still having the pigeon shit, statue shit.
Take a shit at the end. Yeah. Because the guys flying down and going to the bathroom on the statue was enough. It was ridiculous enough. And it's drawing focus away from the fact that, you know, Hillary and Nick are making out on the bench to hide from soldiers. But yeah, on the end, let's put on the little tag of the bird taking the shit too.
Mm-hmm.
Because why not?
I mean, even before that, you have the whole. I mean, because I think that extends off the scene where they're at the dinner or whatever. But after Hillary and Nick escape and they get out there, and they, like, again, they shoo all the bikes off like they're horses.
Yeah.
And I was just like, what the fuck?
Oh, boy. Yeah. Yeah, we get the medal ceremony where all the East German women are clearly played by men. And, you know, again, much better with subtitles, because the other thing that's missing from this is, like, them playing the lyrics of the national anthem, the East German national anthem, which was also funny, like, you know, where it's like, you know, do not tunnel under or try to hurl yourself at the wall or something like that is one of the lines, like. So we end up seeing Agent Cedric, the spy, again. So he survived the whole train encounter, and he goes up to the pretend blind guy, spy guy, I guess, or I think he's pretending to be blind, but he's got the briefcase of all the novelty items. And it's just all these layers, because they throw the one joke about you where the password is all about, you know, who's the best white basketball player. There are no good white basketball players. But then we've got all the sight gags of the blind guy trying to pretend every time someone walked by, oh, here, check this out. You know, and so we've got all the novelty items exploding in his face. And then just to, like, throw a little bit extra on top at the end, we've got the, oh, wait, you dropped your fake dog poo. I don't have fake dog poo. And it's just, you know, so much going on just in this one scene. And you're supposed to pay attention to exposition? Come on. I'm not hearing anything they're saying because I'm watching cigars explode and whipped cream shooting out of cans, but I'm not listening to what's actually happening with the, you know, meet at this place and this place.
Well, it's kind of funny because really, like, Nick's actual story is the whole story, I guess, turns at this dinner party of him thinking that everybody wants him to sing. And so he interrupts, like, and goes and sings his song and takes the moment from, like, that other guy, and then ends up getting thrown in jail.
Yeah.
And if that doesn't happen, like, no movie. He just goes and has, like, his performance or whatever. Like, it's just things are, it's so simple. Like, that's the weird, when I was trying to write the synopsis again, the weird thing was, I was like, the actual synopsis is 5 lines, like, rock singer goes to Germany, he accidentally, like, upsets the government, goes to prison and meets a scientist, first he falls in love with his daughter but doesn't know, he escapes, she helps him escape, then they go and join the resistance that she's a part of, and then the only reason they even need him or want to keep him is because he had met her dad in prison.
Yeah, he could have walked away at that point. Yeah, absolutely. He's made himself, how you say, indispensable.
Indispensable.
I love even a line like that. How you say indispensable? Yeah, indispensable. That's right.
I don't know why. Oh, I don't know why it made me laugh, but when they're introducing all the guys, like when the boys show up.
The boys.
And they introduce Deja Vu, and he's like, "Have we met before, monsieur?" And he's like,
Yeah.
Like, oh, man.
So simple.
So simple.
I mean, I even love when Nick first shows up to this, the restaurant, the club, whatever it is. And as he's walking and strolling up to the maitre d' and he casually plants his gum on the underside of the tray of the waiter that's walking by, I'm just like, there's just so much, like, the performance, what he's doing, there's you just always have to keep an eye out for in this movie. This is not a watch with your phone in your hand movie.
No, for sure.
Like, that was also part of the reason, you know, with watching this movie for this show. I mean, I'm always taking notes of sponsors, and I've got my phone in my hand for my other note taking, and usually I'm listening to about 75% of a movie rather than watching it. But with this one, it's just like, no, on the second watch, it's like, okay, everything away. You got to focus on this movie if you want to try to catch as much as you want, as you can. And you're probably still only catching half of it.
Yeah. Like, even the subtlety of when the maitre d' or whatever is like, oh, you need a suit and tie to come in or whatever. And then they go to get him one, and then he just comes in with, like, or they say you need a jacket and tie. But then he comes back, and he's in, like, a completely different
full tuxedo.
Full tuxedo outfit.
Yeah. And but the whole time, they're measuring him in the background. Like, you see him through the window behind the general. And so, again, you miss what the general is saying. The first time I was watching, I didn't really pick up on who the guy with the beard was. The one that was supposed to be performing. Like, I caught it in the context of the moment, but I didn't realize that we had already been introduced to this character because I was watching them dress Val Kilmer in the back. It's like, hello, Val Kilmer just took his pants off.
Yeah. Oh. Sean was really taken with Val Kilmer.
Whew, I got the vapors. Now, there is one joke that I don't understand, though. And so Hillary ends up meeting up with the blind guy when he gets shot. But his last job that he does before dying is he wants to burn a publisher's clearinghouse envelope. That was the one that I didn't get, where it's like, I don't even get why you would be burning that from what I remember of the publisher's clearinghouse.
Yeah, there are
you don't want anyone else to be a winner.
There are a couple of weird references. That the publisher's clearinghouse one was one where I was like, oh, I bet I vaguely remember what that was.
Yeah,
but then there was another one that was. I need to look at my search history here because I tried to search it to figure out what exactly it was.
I get that a lot when I'm watching, like, a British show where they start using British slangs, and it's like, okay, what is this? Translate this English into English, please.
Yeah, let me see. There's some sort of, clothing company, that was way out of date, and I had no idea what it was. Montgomery Ward. Like, he says something like...
Oh, yeah, I signed him up for a Montgomery Ward...
Yeah.
Yeah, membership or something like that, yeah.
And that was, like, some big insult. To, like, I just was like, I don't get it.
Yeah, yeah. So, Hillary, after seeing her friend shot in the alley, goes into the restaurant. And Nick, I mean, how smooth is that to be like, oh, wait, they're about to throw this pretty lady out. Her bosoms defied gravity for some reason. I'm going to find out in a minute why that is. But but yeah, that's pretty smooth, though, saying, oh, excuse me, the lady's with me. And, you know, walks her down the stairs and, you know, oh, you're looking lovely tonight. Like, still keeping up the ruse. He was looking for a dance partner. And then they walk out onto the dance and they do, like, the... strangest, choreographed. I mean, I'm having flashbacks of social dance in junior high school, you know, phys ed. You're not hearing what they're saying, but what they're saying is hilarious because they're talking about, like, American TV shows and stuff like that. But they're doing, like, these dances where they're clapping and like, crawling through tunnels and stuff. And it's just layers. Layers. So many layers.
Yeah. Is this before... Did we miss the part... The other part I wanted to talk about was, like, after that one dude gets like, crushed in a car, is that before or after this?
Oh,
and then he shows back up, like, in the crushed car thing.
Yeah, Agent Cedric, him getting crushed in the car happens before this, but him coming back as a crushed car is after this. Okay. Yeah, yeah. Wait a minute, this doesn't look like the Howard Johnsons. Driver.
I just love, like, when he comes back as the crushed car, like, his mouth is right there, yet for some reason to drink, she puts, like, a tint, like, and also it has, like, an oil can of Hawaiian Punch,
yeah,
and puts it in the little, like, whatever, the fluid pipe.
Right? Oh, and just the, you know, I think it's in the glove box. Oh, that's not the glove box, and the horn, and then, like, we've got the antenna boner joke as well, because, of course, she's got her boobs in his face. Oh, God. But, yeah, back at the restaurant, we find out that Hillary means she whose bosoms defied gravity. So, you know, I just wanted to make sure that I closed the loop on that comment earlier. But Nick, Nick doesn't know how he got his name. His dad just thought of it while he was shaving. Like, come on! Like, the simplest jokes, even. Every one of them killed me. But I did want to know how he was up on stage singing Tutti Frutti without a microphone with a big band behind him. There's a certain place where I gotta draw the line when it comes to singing. Is, you know, come on, Tutti Frutti with a big band, no microphone?
Yeah.
You can't project that well, Nick.
Oh, man. It's all so good.
Yeah. So then we get to go to, and once again, just more layers, we get to go to the ballet where it's the Nutcracker that's happening. And of course, all the ballet dancers have giant cod pieces, and there's a lot of jumping on the boners of these ballet dancers. But, like, just even the fact that it was the Nutcracker is what they chose to have this very penis-centric humor going on, I thought was just... it. You can't just pick any ballet for that. It's got to be the Nutcracker, right?
Yeah. I mean, if I had done the Nutcracker in this movie, I would just had it be like just them constantly kicking each other in the nuts, just booting.
Well, yeah. Yeah, of course. Absolutely. And just even the fact that Nick is up in one of the boxes, and when the men ballet dancers come out, the little old lady beside him grabs her binoculars and straightens up in her seat. And for some reason, they're handing out Cokes with straws in them in the background. They're just passing them down the line. I don't know why, but it's just another little funny detail in the background.
Yeah.
And so he borrows the lady's binoculars, looks across. He sees Hillary getting a gun pulled on her by some guy. So he goes to save her. There's just so much going on with this fight. Like, the smushed face. Like, even that. When he ends up, like, grabbing the guy's face and it leaves the marks in place afterwards.
Yeah.
And ends up pushing the guy over the balcony, though. But they get out of there, and while they're escaping, they go into the janitor closet, and there's a janitor standing there. And then they open the door for the prop room, and I'm like, okay, now what? And it's just all propellers. Like, just so random.
Yeah, I took a stand-up comedy class once, and the one thing I remember from it, well, aside from that I'll never do stand-up comedy, is that when it comes to humor, the two big things are, like, you can either go with superiority, where it's, like, you play, like, oh, I'm better than everybody, and, like, you know, like, look how stupid things are, or you can go with surprise, where it's just mm-hmm. like you lead people to something that would be expected and then give them something completely unexpected, right? And that's what I think, as I was watching this movie, that's what I feel like it always is. And it's like, with the prop room, like your brain just can't help but be like, oh, behind that door, I'm expecting to see like props, like show props. And then, you get it open and it's propellers and you're like, oh, like they got me, like propellers. Ah.
And your brain is so busy doing these mental gymnastics that you're no longer paying attention to what they're saying, because you have to take that extra couple seconds in your brain to go, oh, props. Okay.
Yeah. And I think this movie just like destabilizes that biology, for lack of a better word, so well. That it never really lets up in a way that lets you kind of like adapt to like, this is the rhythm of the movie to expect.
Yeah, because it's in this prop room is where they look out the window and that's where we see the mice running down the street. You know, it's just, it's so random. But yeah, this is where Nick gets himself arrested and then we cut to him in jail doing tally marks on the wall and his manager comes in and he's, oh, thank God you're here. It's been 20 minutes already. And I'm like, oh my God, such an obvious joke, but the delivery is hilarious.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. So his manager goes to see him in prison though. And again, it's that left turn because he's been talking to everyone and he just can't bring his wife to orgasm. Like, oh my God. Oh, fuck. I do love, though, that to cheer him up or to help out with this problem, he decides to bring out the big old box, the anal intruder. That's quite the mechanism. That's your money's worth in that box. Like, there's a lot going on in that box. The fist attachment, there's a lot. But, you know, I think that's also a perfect place to go for Sponsorship Corner.
I guess depending who the sponsors are.
Go in. We'll go in on the anal intruder because, you know, I had an in on Hawaiian Punch and I had an in on the magazines, but I didn't take any of them. I had an in with Pac-Man, but always on the lookout for product placements and movies. This week, Top Secret is brought to you by us, Time, People, Newsweek, and U.S. News Magazines, The New York Post, Levi's Jeans, Hawaiian Punch, Cuisinart, McDonald's, U-Haul, Rolex Watches, Mercedes, and Ford Pinto Cars, and Pac-Man. Plus, the fictional Guns and Bullets magazine, The Daily Oppressor, Sven Jorgensen Books, Hotel Gay Schuflin, Ripple Blanc Wine, Der Pizza House, and of course, The Anal Intruder. And this has been Sponsorship Corner. Yeah, the prison scene, when they're talking about what they're going to do with Nick, and they go into the office where you see the one soldier with his boots up on the desk, but then he stands up and you just find out that they're just boots on a desk. Like, my common thread in this movie, the shirt I needed made up was, who thinks of this? Who thinks of this kind of thing? You know? And they bring back the boot joke later and it works again.
Yeah, that's bold. It's like, fool me once, shame on me, fool me twice, or however that works.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, boy. But yeah, so Nick is getting beat up by the thugs, the one that's almost blind, so he has to do everything by feel, and the one that's just an idiot. And they're beating him up, and then he goes into this nightmare sequence of, like, he was back in school and he didn't study for the test. And then, like, it comes out of the dream sequence, and he's being flogged. And he's like, oh, thank God, I thought I was back in school. Like, just, fuck. But Nick decides it's time to escape, so we find out that his prison cell is just full of vents. And, oh, wow. Just the sight gags of the, you know, sticking his head out the medicine cabinet and coming out of the toilet.
Yeah, that was funnier than it was, like, had any right to be. I don't know why.
Any right, yeah. Apparently, the Cher poster was up on the wall because she was dating Val Kilmer at the time.
Wow.
Yeah.
How old is Cher?
I think she's several years older than Val Kilmer, yeah. I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure that would have been a Demi Moore, Ashton Kutcher situation back then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, so eventually he does find his way out of the room and he runs into, you know, it's funny. In my notes, I have a very young Alfred from Batman, but it's like, actually, this is like 5 years earlier. I guess he's not really that young. Did Michael Goff do some hard living in those 5 years? He seems older as Alfred. I don't know. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it depends, like, because, I mean, by the time he's Alfred with Val Kilmer, that's, like, 13 years.
Yeah.
No.
No, not
that was 95. No, so, no, that was only, like, 11 10 years. Years.
Yeah, 10 yeah, 11 years. Yeah. Decade later, and that's what, and, yeah. I don't know.
I guess his hair is grayed, though, and so that might make him look older.
Yeah. Yeah, it might help having the Alfred glasses on him as well.
Yeah.
But interestingly, though, the very first scene that Val Kilmer has in each of those movies with Michael Goff is in some sort of underground lab. Because their first scene together in Batman Forever is in the Batcave, so.
Yeah. I'll get drive-through. Classic. Classic Joel Schumacher.
I want to see that scene. You know? Like, I want to see someone roll through the drive-thru in the Batmobile. Yeah.
I'll have a six-piece nugget meal. Sweet and sour sauce. Filet fish. What do you mean you don't have the McRib? Where's Rachel? The Alfred, so, the Alfred line I always remember from the OG Batman like film franchise is actually from Batman Returns when he makes him. I don't even know what it's called. In my brain, it's called Vichyssoise because that's how I remember it. My childhood brain, and Michael Keaton spits it out because he's like, "It's cold," and he's like, "It's Vichyssoise, sir. It's supposed to be cold."
And then it's good. so they're going to have an execution. You know, Nick thinks he's okay, but they're going to have an execution. But first of all, we do the old bait and switch with the priest, where if you listen to the Latin that he's reciting as he's walking down the hall, it's just all random Latin phrases, like. He just says, like, ad nauseum, you know. But then, yeah, we find out that it's the priest that ends up being executed. And Nick is actually going to be executed by firing squad. The little old lady with the stay of execution where the phone is ringing. And the little old lady with the walker is the one responsible for answering the phone. That scene killed me. That one absolutely destroyed me. And I read that originally that scene was going to go on for much longer because she was going to get almost all the way to the phone and then they were going to give up phoning and she was going to turn around and start going back and then they were going to try phoning again and then she was going to go towards the phone one more time. And I'm like, out of all the things that they did in this movie, I guess they decided that they were piling in so many jokes, it was just too risky to devote like a full 90 seconds to this gag, I guess. That must have been what it was. But for me, I'm like, that would have been funnier.
Yeah.
That would have been funnier having the turnaround.
Yeah. And it would have fit the movie so well, I think. Like,
yeah.
Of course that would happen.
Yeah. So Nick, though, is let out to perform. Is he only let out to perform? That's one thing I was unclear on. Because at the end, Hillary comes to, like, rescue him.
Yeah,
Is that because he still has to go back?
Yeah, they decide to let him perform because they didn't want to draw suspicion to their plan.
But they're still going to execute him.
Yeah, when they get back.
Okay.
Because it's just like a one day, it was like a one day festival or whatever.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Yeah, and again, we get to see more great Val Kilmer performing, but just like all the random things, like the mic stand that just gets longer and longer and longer, or all the teenage girls in the audience screaming like he's the Beatles, and the one girl is holding up a sign where it says Nick, but it's spelt phonetically as Neek because she's German. Like, it's just, man, that was so funny. Now, when he's singing the love song, the girl that he picks out of the audience is, like, the youngest-looking girl in the audience. Is that supposed to be intentional to make it seem more awkward that, like, this girl that he's singing this love song to is clearly, like, I don't know, 15 when everyone else in the audience might be 18? I just don't know if it's another layer. I mean, the girl was giving this fantastic performance of how a fan would be if, you know, someone like Elvis was singing right in her face. But I was just wondering whether, out of all the women that were around here that looked like the appropriate age for Nick, he chooses the young girl. So it's just, I don't know whether that was also an added layer.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good... I'll have to watch it again, I guess. And surely I'll uncover more.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's so many more layers.
Like, even the set, like, I don't know, I missed it the first time through, but in that performance, like, I got the, like, hey, the, when he goes to put the noose around his neck, but then when he goes to, like, put his head in the oven, and then he goes to lays on the train tracks, I was like, oh my gosh.
Oh, boy. Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously, mental health is an issue. If you need help, go see it, but, oh. A movie in 1984 is brave enough to do suicide jokes, I guess. So
yeah, that's like, I mean, that's a question, I guess. Like, could you even make a movie like this anymore? I guess, like, really, it's only that and the gun thing. I think they'll play. Everything else is pretty like comical. Like everything else is just like. Well, you just don't expect it.
Well, earlier when you mentioned that, you know, you've never seen one of these kind of movies, what about, like, the ones that are straight-out spoof movies? Have you ever seen Scary Movie or Not Another Teen Movie?
Yeah, I've seen those.
Epic Movie, okay. Yeah. Okay, so, I mean, not nearly as funny and not nearly as layered, but...
Yeah, I was going to say, with those ones, it's kind of like there's the occasional, like, random thing, but it's more about, like... It's more about, I feel like, poking fun at, like, how stupid those movies are.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, this one, I feel like, if it is parodying something, I don't know what it is, necessarily. No. And it just seems like it's just trying to do whatever is funny.
Yeah, I mean, like I said at the top, obviously, Elvis movies are one of the influences. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that I think that's where you get the scene of him singing Are You Lonesome Tonight to her. Is that would be something that is like straight ripoff from an Elvis movie. And the scene where it flashes back to her time with Nigel on the island, that is a straight ripoff of The Blue Lagoon.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
I don't know if
that one I knew. And I mean, to be honest, that to me, that was the most this is weird, but like that was the most random scene to me in the entire movie.
Yeah.
Introduce this weird
Nigel
to be the guy who comes back at the end and obviously is the villain. But like it was such a I thought that was a strange departure from everything else that had been happening in the movie before.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Hillary ends up rescuing him from his concert. And it turns out that the scientist at the prison was her dad. And this is the pigeon part. Oh, my God. But we've discussed that already. And then they go to the bookstore, the Swedish bookstore. And it's the weird backwards scene where just the idea to put Peter Cushing in this weird prosthetic where he has this giant eye just for the sake of this magnifying joke. The magnifying glass joke works. But he's got this ridiculous eye for the whole movie. Apparently, the head mold that they used in this was used by the Star Wars guys for Rogue One to use as a reference to help when they wanted to make digital Peter Cushing for Rogue One.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's cool. I thought, like, that eye prosthetic thing I was not expecting.
Yeah.
When that thing stayed, I was just... That was like the one gag. This was the one scene where I really noticed the gag the first time around, and at first was kind of just like, "What the fuck? Like, what movie? Yeah. What is going on in this movie?"
Yeah,
but I appreciated it more the second time around.
Well, and if you've ever seen the Weird Al video for Amish Paradise, there is a scene where he's walking by while everything's going backwards, and the inspiration was this scene in this movie for him to do that in Amish Paradise.
Nice. Yeah, I was reading that Top Secret is like Weird Al's favorite movie.
Yeah, I can see why. Yeah, have you seen Weird, the Al Yankovic story?
No.
Oh,
is that
my
the new
God.
Daniel Radcliffe one?
The Daniel Radcliffe one. It is hilarious. It is very, very funny. It's almost like they've made a biopic movie where Weird Al is the main character. But it's not a Weird Al biopic. Does that make sense? It's you know, it's like there's like two things that are true and then everything else is just fictional.
Ah, interesting.
It is a very, very funny movie. So in the commercials, if you've seen like him drinking and throwing the bottle against the wall and like having all these meltdowns and burning his agent with a cigarette, it's just like, yeah, no, it's true that he got his accordion from a traveling salesman. That part's true.
Okay.
Everything else? No.
Nice. I want to watch it.
No, it is so funny. So funny. Anyway, so yeah, we get the story about Hillary's childhood, which is the spoof of the Blue Lagoon, like you said, just random out of nowhere scene. And then Nick tells his story with such a straight face about getting lost in a department store. And the PA system was down. So days turned into weeks. Oh my God. Like, and then he sings the slightly altered version of Are You Lonesome Tonight, which ends, you know,
at Macy's,
I'm lonesome. Oh boy. But yeah, we get to meet the entire French underground. I love the names. Oh my God. Just, you know, souffle and croissant and chocolate mousse. And...
I like the pastry ones. I'll be honest. I didn't really get the other ones. Like, one was like Carthage, well, détente.
Yeah, well, Latrine is the one that ends up constantly getting injured. He's the one that keeps showing up looking like with this massive head wound. Yeah, that's Latrine. So, I mean, so he's the poo-poo guy, I guess, right? Latrine? But, mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I was trying to think of what the other ones were, but then they got to the food ones, and I'm like, well, shit, that's what I know. Croissant, souffle, yeah, that's what I know right there. I had to try to think back in my high school French to remember what the other ones were.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then we've got a firefight that breaks out in the French underground's headquarters where they're just smashing out all the windows. Like that
except
I mean
the, except the one that can't
one
break.
Guy that can't. Like the shattering of the sledgehammer effect was probably a pretty impressive one, because you know you have to have a strong enough plastic to be able to make that gag work, right? But
you got the X's and O's. I like that one too.
X's and O's. Yeah, I like the one where it's Nigel. All the windows of his are shot out except for one. Yeah. And he smashes that out to shoot through it. Yeah. Like, oh, so great. And then they all manage to escape to the pizza house, where in the background, all you're doing is watching people stretching this cheese and wondering how far they're going to go with this cheese gag.
Yeah, I was wondering if it's kind of like a dated reference for Nick when he doesn't want to be known to say he's Mel Torme. Like, I didn't really know what to think of that. I know that name, but I don't really know who that is for reference.
Well, Mel Torme, I mean, he's a jazz singer. He was called the Velvet Fog. I love his voice. But he's very much in the vein of someone like, you know, like a crooner, like a Dean Martin or a Frank Sinatra or a Tony Bennett. Tony Bennett might be a better reference point, actually. And so he's that kind of guy. And so I think that's the idea, is the juxtaposition between this big, flashy dance number to, you know, what Mel Torme actually would do. Mel Torme would be singing Luck Be a Lady Tonight and stuff.
Hmm.
Yeah. So we've got the scene then where they're parachuting out of the plane, and Nick is going past Hillary in the parachute, and she's oh Nick, and he manages to float back up, like, just having this heart to heart with the parachutes about, you know, the fact that Nigel is back in her life at this point. I like when Nigel is reintroduced into her life too, and he's shirtless and gleaming in oil and you know, with the necklace around, you know, like, it just looks exactly like he did in the previous scene to make sure we knew it was Nigel. I just love it.
And she's like, she's like measuring his biceps and his chest and like,
yeah. And then his Johnson. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just even the reveal of, you know, she, you know, like, seeing the tape measure was long enough. And then she turns the tape measure so that we can see that her thumb is at 10, you know, like, it's just, oh, yeah. And so the cow scene was another one that I'm sure I knew about. I'm sure I knew about the cow disguise as well, which is why it's like, I don't know if I've seen this movie or not.
I was impressed, but, like, big props to Daisy the cow for her performance in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, I don't know, there was just something about the way that when they're not, like, clearly it's not the, like, the cow costume or whatever, when it's the actual cow, I just was like, it shot so well.
Yeah, apparently cows hate wearing boots, so that's why, like, the bottoms are busted out on the bottom of the boots. You probably noticed that they were more, you know, spats more than they were boots.
Well, the first time I watched it, when I saw the boots, I thought that it was actually, like people.
Yeah.
And then the second time I watched it, I was like, oh, no, that's an actual, like, cow.
With boots.
And then I thought, man, that cow probably was not happy wearing those boots.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, like, just rife for comedy, because, of course, we can get a blowjob joke out of it, and we can get a bestiality joke out of it. So, well, I mean, I guess the blowjob joke is also, I'm not looking for a loophole. That's bestiality too. I know that. But yeah, I mean, we get both ends of Nigel being violated by cows in this scene. And then the grappling hook gag, where they throw the grappling hook and it's like they end up throwing the guy.
Yeah. And then you have the guy, the soldier, fall off, and he turns into like a porcelain man, and yeah, yeah. It's just so much, like,
yeah,
I don't know, we've probably only covered even like half of all the gags that,
right, yeah,
that are in it.
Like, just even when Hillary figures out that Nigel is a bad guy, and the way that Nigel is walking, yeah, like he's just been violated by a bull. Yeah, it's just, you know, like, okay. So often movies like this will drop a gag like that, but to actually keep it running, okay, that, good on you.
Well, even after that, like, you get the big, like, Nigel kidnaps Hillary, Nick goes after her with the motorcycle, you have that whole back and forth. And then you're like, oh, they go flying into the river. This is going to be it. But no, it continues on, and you have the whole underwater Western.
Underwater fight. What the shit? That apparently Val Kilmer earned a diving certification because he filmed this scene.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I was impressed because, like,
right?
Like, that had to be difficult to do.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, like, I mean, I don't know what depth of water they were in, but, like, I don't know. I just imagine, like trying to even hold your breath. Or even, like, I don't know, I'm a pretty floaty guy. Like, I can, like, they must have been weighed down by something.
Oh, they had to. The way they dropped to the bottom like stones, yeah, they had to have, like, diver weights on or something. Yeah, I imagine it was not a question of how close the surface of the water was. I think it was more a question of how close the reserve tanks were,
yeah,
you know, behind the cameras. Yeah. Oh, and I also forgot to mention the little wrestling tag team moment that we had for Colin.
Yeah, with Chocolate introduce Moose.
Yeah, introduce you at the top as Chocolate Moose, and there you go. I mean, he also gets to wrestle in this. Doing the turnbuckle stuff off of the barbed wire. It's like, oh. Rope work and barbed wire is probably a bad combination, but still hilarious. Yeah, that final scene, though, like, it just, I was very impressed, and just, I know just from being underwater how hard it is just to be there with my eyes open for a few seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And you're doing these choreographed fights, and you're doing some major acting. I mean, when he puts on the hat and winks to the girl and takes off through the saloon doors, like, it's just, you know, like, there's a lot going on underwater that you would not get those performances out of me.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah, and there's just, like, no explanation. Like, is there just some sort of underwater race of humans?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're like mer people. Yeah. But the mer people are still stuck in the old West phase. You know, they're a little behind the times. They're not modern like our society. Yeah. Atlantis has finally caught up to the old West.
Yeah.
Is what we're dealing with here. Yeah. Yeah, and so he gets out of there. Hillary's boobs start glowing, and then she's saying goodbye to everyone. You know, goodbye, Deja Vu. Goodbye, Chocolate Moose. And I'll miss you most of all, Scarecrow. What the fuck is going on? and then they fly off, and it's the end. And I sincerely thought there was going to be another psych out. Like, I sincerely thought, you know, when it said the end, I'm like, okay. And come on. No. Why are you rolling credits? Where's the extra joke? But the extra joke is during the credits. I don't know if you watched the credits really closely with this movie.
I didn't know.
No. Yeah, just like Airplane and Naked Gun, they like to throw in some hidden credits. They've gone further when it comes to some of those other movies, where Naked Gun, I remember they would have like recipes in the credits as well. But yeah, there was a couple. There was like, you know, one where it was like, hey, diddle, diddle, the cat and the fiddle, or something like that, you know, and this space for rent, you know, things like that. And then at the very end of the credits, we get to see a little bit more Nick Rivers, like a Nick Rivers music video at the very end of the credits.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Yeah. It was nice. Yeah. Nick Rivers singing us out. Sean's questioning his sexuality. and it fades to black. And that is Top Secret. Now, Colin on IMDb. It is scored as 7.2 out of 10, has a Metascore of 68. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 76% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 80%. But Colin, those are just numbers. Like a punch to the kisser underwater, hit us with some reviews.
All right. Charles Brindle gives the movie 5 out of 5 stars and says, "There is genius in the absurdity. Definitely some cringe factor if watching with younger family members or after, say, 1998, but still slapstick-tastic. I enjoyed a version on Amazon where you get actual translation of the German phrases used in the film. Priceless."
Oh, it's on Amazon?
This might have been old, and it could also be American. Oh, okay. It's from a year ago.
Oh, okay, because I just, like, I had to find a copy somewhere.
I got it at the library.
I think the fact that I said my first copy didn't have subtitles was probably enough of a hint of how I watched this movie. But I think I loved it so much that this may make it into my DVD collection.
There you go. Jack Pavey gives the movie 5 out of 5 stars and says, "I watched this movie not long ago, and I haven't laughed so hard in all my life. Awesome film, funniest jokes, Val Kilmer at his best. But he says, I know a little German. He's sat over there. That's a quote from the film, if you don't know.
Okay. All right. Oh, God. Like, so many jokes that I didn't even think of that one. Yeah. Yeah. I know a little German. Fuck. Ridiculous.
And then Travis Sims didn't give a star rating, but says, Top Secret is one of the funniest, most off-the-wall movies ever filmed. Featuring a young Val Kilmer, I think Top Secret is the best of all spoof films. Spaceballs is a close second. This thing spoofs everything. Beach Boys songs, spy pictures, war movies, westerns, and even Elvis is not safe. It's ridiculous, outrageous, hilarious, and all in the name of good fun. The spit gig has to be my favorite bit. You've seen it in countless movies. The hero is being verbally accosted by the villain, and he spits in his face. This time, however, the hero is on the other side of the room. Other memorable jokes include the Skeet songs, the anal intruder, the cow scenes, and the backwards bit with Peter Cushing. There are countless little things like that which make Top Secret a definite cult classic and a certifiable must-see. And then I guess I'll sing it. He says, wish they all could be double barrel. Wish they all could be double barrel guns. There you go.
Nice. And I mean, with the spit gag, not only the fact that he's across the room, but the fact that they added a whooshing sound effect as you see it fly past all the other soldiers. Oh, boy. Wow, right on. So, 7.2 and 80 out of audiences and 68 and 76 from critics. Anyone that has listened to this podcast up to this point would realize that I was floored by this movie. I love this movie. With that one review that says Spaceballs is a close second, I'd have to revisit Spaceballs. But from what I remember of Spaceballs, very different comedy. I mean, the difference between seeing this and seeing Blazing Saddles, like, the Mel Brooks sensibility is so much different than the David Zucker, Jerry Zucker, you know, sensibility. What you said back in Blazing Saddles is it felt like an inside joke that you weren't on the inside of. Whereas this one is, if you don't like that joke, don't worry, you're going to like this one. Because it just appeals to every sensibility. There's a joke for everyone in this movie, I would say. Are some people gonna hate this movie? Yeah, probably. It's, you know, it's probably not a great movie, but my God, I laughed my ass off all the way through. I was blown away by Val Kilmer's performance. What a showman. And I've got nothing bad to say about this movie. If, you know, thank you, Zarin and Elizabeth, for bringing me this movie. Because if this is the first time that I've seen this movie, you've got a fan for life now in this movie. Like, it's, I loved it. I thought it was hilarious. It, you know, I'm not going to go 10 out of 10, but I'm up there. I'm definitely in the high 80s range. This was a hilarious movie. Very entertaining.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a movie I'm very glad to have watched. I agree with all Sean's points. It was Val Kilmer as I've never seen him before. And I think, like, weirdly, it made me, I've never been, like, the biggest Val Kilmer fan, but I was like, oh, I appreciate him more after watching this movie.
Yeah, he went up a notch.
Like, I can't understate that, like, there's no way that we were able to cover every single, like, weird gag that shows up in this movie, so
not even close.
I highly recommend that anybody who's even remotely interested go and watch it as soon as you're able to do so.
I mean, you always give a spoiler at the top. Hopefully they haven't made it through this far into the podcast without seeing this movie.
Yeah.
But I mean, really, if it's also been a while since you've seen this movie, I highly recommend that you go out and rewatch this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would end it. There's a quote on the Wikipedia page from David Zucker that I think accurately summarizes this movie. He says that the lesson we took from Airplane was just fill up 90 minutes with jokes and you have a movie. And then he says, With Top Secret, it's very funny, but it really isn't a good movie. It really didn't have a plot or real characters or real structure. And that's for the guy who made it. But it is very funny.
It is very funny, yeah. I mean, it's like I said with my first watch through, with the fact that I didn't have subtitles, I found myself watching the background so much that I missed the entire plot of the movie. And then when I actually did focus on the plot of the movie, it's like, oh, it's a very basic plot. There's really... It really is just the jokes.
Yeah.
That's the movie. The movie is jokes, and they're all funny.
Yeah.
Except the Publisher's Clearinghouse one. I don't get that one.
But I bet that one played back in the day.
It might have. It might have. Yeah, that's for sure. Well, there we go. That's Top Secret, and that's our show for this week. Oh, boy. A huge thank you to Zarin and Elizabeth at Ridiculous Crime for requesting this. If you like that show, one thing you can do to really help us out on the business end is, well, just tell people, or share our posts, or give us some stars on whatever app you listen to your podcasts on. All of that, word of mouth, just spreads so much happiness and joy for... I tried coming in from a different approach and still crashed on the landing. Oh my god. But yeah, word of mouth is important for a show. So, you know... Tell people and help us build an audience, get some more earballs on the show. Or if you want to become a producer of this show and donate to us financially, go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne. You become part of our Patreon family. You become an executive producer and you get a shout out, just like executive producer Joshua Blum from the 13th Hour podcast. Figured I might as well start plugging his shit too. I've always dropped that off too.
And... if you want to drop us a line, you can do so at IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com. Let us know what movies you used to like. And you can also check out our website for links to all our podcast episodes and social media pages at IUsedToLikeThisOne.com.
I Used to Like This One is created by, hosted by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is edited by Sean Wells. Music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band Carter in the Capitals anywhere you listen to music. If you want to hear more content from me, check out my other podcast, In Front of the Yellow Line, anywhere pods are cast. Thank you for listening. And join us next week when we get into Christmas movies on I Used to Like This One. Oh, I was originally going to have that you were the front end of my cow disguise to the asshole of my cow disguise, by the way. That's...
Oh, that would have been a... that would have been a good one, too. I was just...
Yeah, I know.
It's kind of funny. Maybe I should have finished watching the movie before I messaged you. I was just at that scene, and I was like... I just thought it was hilarious, and I was just like...
Yeah, no, absolutely.